Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know, we have an intention every week with Advanced Living Radio to bring forward information, guests, things that are going to help support you to blossom your life, to move through some of the challenging times we're facing, find opportunity, and to make our lives really wonderful. To accomplish that daily, I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, a major goal and well worth going after. One piece at a time, one week at a time, bringing you more and more goodness to help support the fulfillment of that goal of mine. And I think we all share that we want to have our lives work beautifully for everyone. Now, this week, we have an amazing guest. You know how we're hearing about climate change, global warming, economic, financial crisis. I mean, so many things going on. And we think, well, okay, sometimes the corporations don't seem to be so involved, we think, or what's going on? Well, we are in for a major treat today. We have a gentleman that can help us get some of the underlying skinny, some of the good information to help us cheer ourselves up about some of the potential of actually turning things around and making this work. This gentleman, his name is Chip Cummins, and he's the founder, producer, and director of a program called RDAY, A-R-E-D-A-Y. He's the managing director of American Spirit Productions and national coordinating producer of Clean Energy Week. And Chip produced Native Wind Powering America. It's a public service announcement that debuted at the Clinton Global Initiative and was broadcast nationally and internationally. And Chip has been a longtime advocate of developing and implementing renewable energy resources to abate what is called GHG, or the greenhouse gases, and of course dealing with climate change. Skip was trained by Al Gore, our former vice president, who's so much of an environmentalist, to present the Climate Project. And in 2009, he produced 13 side events at the UNFCCC, the COP conference 15 in Copenhagen, and is now producing the 7th annual RDAY Summit, called Creating a New Energy Economy at Speed and Scale. So welcome aboard, Chip.
Well, thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. And one correction to that intro, and that is that this is, in fact, the 8th annual RDA,
wow,
or American Renewable Energy Day Summit, and the theme this year is actually putting the green in green, as in money, subtext, monetizing carbon in a global economy.
Ah, fantastic. Now, some might not understand the acronym AREDAY. What does that stand for?
That's American Renewable Energy Day.
Ah.
And, yeah.
Wow, well, that sounds pretty important, because we want that to take place. We hope the government would pull it out, and we haven't seen as much as we'd like. So here you are for the 8th year in a row bringing forward this theme. And what inspired you to create RDAY?
Well, I was working with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory as a filmmaker, covering the Native American wind energy resources that exist in the northern Great Plains of our country. And during the making of that film, I realized that we were very quickly packing our atmosphere with carbon, CO2, such that we're dynamically affecting the temperature differentials at the poles, creating some very unstable climatic conditions. And I think all of our listeners know that we've been experiencing some very extreme weather in the past few years, and it seems to be accelerating quite quickly. And this is directly attributed to anthropogenic or human-induced CO2. This is undisputable scientific fact, even though a lot of folks in our country seem to think that, you know, that science is a choice and that we don't have to admit to the fact that we humans are actually responsible for that, even if it's just 1% of the total greenhouse gases that are emitted by the planet. That's the tipping point. This is documented. And anyway, so once I realized, wow, the truth of that, I began to focus my attention on what can be done about it, because I'm not really interested in exacerbating or talking about the problem till we're blue in the face, but rather, you know, implementing the solutions. And so the solutions are quite obvious. We have the technological knowledge to fix both the economic and the environmental crisis, both at the same time, and also implement the greatest wealth creation opportunities facing humanity in the history of the world.
Wow. Boy, that talks about something very optimistic. I'm curious, the subtitle of this year's conference, Putting the Green in Green, where you mentioned monetizing carbon in the global economy. Could you give some more details so that kind of in layman's terms we could understand what that means?
Sure. You know, it's quite simple. We actually live in a world, a worldwide economy that's pegged to the extraction and burning of fossil fuels, whether it's coal, oil, or gas. That's the energy that makes the great economies of the world turn at its most foundational basis. And right now, we are dealing with a situation that where we have to very quickly go from a worldwide economy based on fossil fuels to a worldwide economy based on extracting carbon from the atmosphere. We've got to go back to the life-sustaining levels that nurtured life for a million years, which was about 280 to 300 parts per million. And we've raised that fully one-third up to about 400 parts per million, just as we discovered oil in 1859, which is not that long ago. Also add to that the doubling and tripling of the human population and adding all those consumers, that's really, you know, what's going on here. And so I believe that the Earth can easily sustain you know, 15 or 20 billion humans, but we've got to do it right. And that means we've got to get away from the, you know, the dirty forms of energy that are hurting us and begin to implement very rapidly the clean forms of energy that sustain us and nurture us. And at the same time, we'll create a very, very vibrant growth in our economic sectors right, across the board. So it's quite simple. It's not brain surgery, but we've got to engage the capital markets in order to do that. And that, of course, means Wall Street and also all of the stock markets of the various industrial countries in the world.
Wow. Okay. So that's what you talk about, monetizing carbon. It's not so much the fossil fuels are carbon-based, but you mentioned being able to switch from using the fossil fuels that are extracted from the earth to using some of the carbon that's in the atmosphere?
Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but believe it or not, there are air capture carbon-negative technologies that can literally suck the carbon right out of the atmosphere, and then we can monetize it. Initially, there's a worldwide market in enhanced oil recovery, and even though that's getting more oil and then burning that, which produces more carbon, we've still got to figure out a way of taking carbon out of the atmosphere and then making money doing it. Now, this already happens. I mean, anybody who is in the fossil fuel industry and the oil industry knows that, you know, EOR, enhanced oil recovery, is a $18 billion global business that's growing. And that's one of the ways to monetize carbon. But there's other ways. We can also put it into greenhouses and grow plants. We can also put it into carbon fibers for bicycles, et cetera, you know, making very, very strong materials that will actually recreate the automobile industry just in terms of body parts, because these are much stronger and lighter than what we currently do, manufacturing it out of, you know, aluminum and metals and so forth, which, by the way, are very carbon intensive. So it's really looking at, you know, our carbon footprint from cradle to cradle, from the beginning to the end. And it's also about closed loop manufacturing, where the process of creating energy from one manufacturing process becomes the waste product becomes the energy for the next, and we just keep going around, and eventually we're not putting anything into the atmosphere. We're just reusing it. I know this sounds very futuristic, but there has been many, many studies done, and whether it's the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, what have you. But what's the bottom line is that the private sector and the free markets are implementing these strategies right now and making money, and that's without government policy and legislation. So the good news is that the free markets are already reacting to this, because energy efficiency is at the absolute bottom of the foundation when we talk about this. We are so inefficient in how we get energy and how we produce it and then how we distribute it, that just paying attention to the efficiencies can absolutely recreate our entire society. And so add to that the renewable energies, whether it's solar, wind, biofuels, geothermal, we can very, very quickly raise the standard of living and clean up the atmosphere.
Boy, that's exciting to say the least. Now, this year's conference, can you give us the dates for this event?
Sure. It's coming up in a couple of weeks up here in Aspen, Colorado, where I live, and it's taking place at the Hotel Jerome, and it's the 17th through the 21st. Of August, and on the 17th, that's our day film festival day. We'll have renewable energy films downtown. It's been at the ISIS Theater, very affordable. I think it's $15 to come to a film, or maybe $50 for the whole day. And then we start our summit on Thursday, where we're delighted that Jane Lubchenco, who is the the head of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, our government's, our nation's leading scientist, will be joining us for a keynote, and many others throughout the weekend. Go to arday.net, www.areday.net to see the lineup. But we'll be featuring many significant people throughout the 3.5-day summit. Ted Turner is joining us. T. Boone Pickens has just decided to come back. That's not even in the program yet, but he's coming back, as well as former Governor Ritter and some of the folks from Hollywood. Chevy Chase will be here, Daryl Hannah, many others, experts in renewable energy, energy efficiency, and sustainability, to talk about solutions to the environmental and economic crisis facing our nation and world.
Ah, wow. Now, when you mention people like T. Boone Pickens and Ted Turner, I mean, these are some of the very, very wealthy individuals. And is there something you can share a little bit about some of their position or some of what they bring to the table in terms of making this a powerful event?
Well, you know, Ted has been a champion of renewable energy and solutions to our planet's problems for many, many years. He's probably the world's lead philanthropist in terms of putting his money where his mouth is, giving $1 billion to the UN Foundation, I think 10 or 15 years ago at this point. He'll be joined, by the way, by Tim Wirth, former Colorado senator who also runs the UN Foundation for and with Ted, really putting that money to good work in third world countries on issues such as energy access for the poor, as an example, or nuclear disarmament. These are some of the big issues that Ted's been concerned with. He also happens to be the largest landowner in the United States, with I think over 2 million acres of land on his various holdings, and he's very actively involved in preserving that land and implementing really, really strong environmental solutions to the preservation of the wildlife and the wetlands and all of the other things. He's an incredible example of what it means to be a philanthropist and a steward in our society, and we're delighted that he's coming back to our day for the third time, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So he obviously believes in American renewable energy. And then T. Boone Pickens will be joining him, and he's, you know, while politically maybe Ted's on the left and T. Boone's on the right, they come together in the middle where it comes when it comes to talking about renewable energy and energy efficiency as solutions to our most pressing problems. And what T. Boone brings to the table, of course, is his plan. T. Boone's very concerned about national security and energy independence. He has 1 million. People in his army that support his view that it's crazy to be giving, Middle Eastern countries $1 trillion a year of U.S. dollars for their oil when we could instead use a much cleaner burning fossil fuel, natural gas, as a transitional fuel, and create energy independence and national security at the same time. Of course, natural gas comes with its problems, the problems of how we extract it, the fracking, and so forth. But we feel that if we implement the right way of extracting this, that this can buy us the necessary time. Remember, natural gas is a 40% cleaner burning fuel than coal for electricity production, and that's a whole lot of avoided carbon throughput into the atmosphere.
Wow, 40%.
Yeah, well, depending on who you talk to, 30 to 40%, but certainly it's a lot cleaner, and, coal being the dirtiest of all of the fossil fuels. Ken, we aren't so smart in how, we're using 100-year-old technology, whether we talk about the transportation industry sectors, cars and trucks, we're using these internal combustion motors that really we haven't changed a lot of the basic structure of those since we invented them 100 years ago, And on top of that, when we burn a coal to power our homes. I mean, basically, we extract it, we dig it, we put it onto trains. You know, this is all very intensive and very, very dirty. And then we put it into a centralized power plant where we burn it in order to heat water to create steam that spins a turbine, releasing enormous amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere. And that part of the process, and then we take that electricity that's generating the electricity out of the spinning turbine, and we put it through these high tension lines hundreds of miles back into our population centers, with sometimes up to 30% line loss. And so you can see where efficiency becomes a big part of the problem and solution along the way, because we don't have to be doing it so inefficiently, and so we need to really begin to rethink how it is that we produce our power. Obviously, we all have to use our computers, and we have to go to work in our cars, but now we're seeing a transition to an electric car that's being produced by General Motors and by many other companies, and even though they're a very small percentage of the market now, they're going to be coming. But how do we produce the electricity that recharges those cars? Well, I just explained a process that's very inefficient. We've got to start getting it right. As Ted Turner says, very simply and eloquently, we got to start, stop doing the dumb things and start doing the smart things.
Ah, wow. That's incredible to realize that there's all these inefficiencies in the process that could make a huge impact, and especially when we're dealing with a global financial crisis. I don't know how. I'm hearing things about now we've raised our debt ceiling for the country, but that seems like a temporary fix. Will some of these things tie into ways that we can actually get our economy under control, do you think?
I absolutely think so, Ken. In fact, I'm a true believer in the fact that renewable energy, clean technology, and energy efficiency across the board, implemented from China to the United States to Europe to Africa to South America, all of the seven continents and all of the great economies of the world, will very quickly transform our global economic superstructure into a very sustainable model that actually will clean up the environment and provide economic prosperity. And in fact, in our own country, I see a time where, the stock market that today is, 12,000 points and maybe has never been over 14, will grow to 20,000 and beyond. I mean, this is not a bubble that's going to break like back in the 90s when we had the dot-com era, but something that will actually be sustained. In other words, there's big money, and I'm talking about the biggest money that humanity will ever see in solving the environmental crises and cleaning up the oceans and restoring the world's forests, in putting together systematic structures that are going to enhance our soil instead of deplete it, so that all of our farmers and all of the food producers in the world can begin to grow food abundantly without having to deplete the soil and so forth. I mean, we really are, in my view, just at the beginnings of the great transition that's going to enable us to live sustainably on the planet.
Wow. Now, you mentioned, for instance, the idea of farming, growing food in some different ways, and I've looked at the difference, and we've had a number of guests on the show talking about the difference between conventionally grown food with a lot of the chemicals and the pesticides versus organics, and I don't know if that stuff ties in at all to sustainability.
Sure, of course. There's many, many opportunities in terms of providing solutions to that.
Wow. Okay. So that is a part of this whole movement of sustainability, and the food production would be possibly shifting agribusiness from the way they're producing food into a healthier food supply?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think most Americans realize that we probably could stand to eat a little bit less meat. And and the way that the meat's being raised in terms of factory farms and so forth produces an enormous amount of methane, which is the actually a much stronger greenhouse gas, 20 times more potent than CO2. One of the movements that's been sort of created is something called Meatless Mondays, where everybody takes a day off from eating meat. You don't need it every day. And eats a vegetarian diet that in of itself reduces the carbon throughput, enormously. It's like equivalent, there's a lot of different analogies, but we could take millions of cars off the road by just, or their equivalent CO2 throughput just by choosing a vegetarian diet one day a week. There's many different ways to look at and apply the solutions to the carbon crisis. We've got an enormous opportunity. You know, in ancient China, there's a character that basically says, crisis equals opportunity, and I believe that's true. And never has there been more of a crisis, but more of an opportunity facing the human race than right now. So we've just got to move as quickly as we can in that direction.
I love it. Was talking in terms of I don't know, you may have heard of Reverend Michael Beckwith.
Sure.
At the Agape Church. Well, one of the metaphors that he talks about that illustrates the crisis and opportunity things is he talks about the chick that's inside the egg, and as it's growing for a period of time, everything is really great, and the egg's provided all it's needed, and everything is cool. But then all of a sudden the space gets cramped, and the little chick goes into crisis mode because it can't sustain itself inside the egg anymore, and so it has to peck its way out into who knows what. It doesn't know, but when it breaks free of the shell of the egg, opens up into a whole new world.
So, exactly.
So I'm kind of getting that sense here that we're not seeing as much on the news about all these possibilities and all these important people that are really committed to this. It's more about, well, who's beat up on who in what neighborhood, who shot who, what car accident, what caught on fire, versus, my gosh, we've got Ted Turner, we've got T. Boone Pickens, we've got Hollywood celebrities that are all there saying, here, we could do this, folks.
That's exactly right. And we're doing it in Aspen, Colorado, which is, where the billionaires push around the millionaires. And so we want to make sure that we get, the folks that have the most, aware of the solutions to this conversation and become actively engaged. Our day is very, very concerned about engaging everybody in all strata of society.
Wow. And as I'm listening to you and folks, you got to go take a look at this areday.net and look at this group of folks that are going to be showing up for this. And I'm thinking to myself, this is almost like an amazing clearinghouse of people from all kinds of different sectors involved in the totality of what's going to be needed to create this transformation. Is that on target a bit?
Oh, absolutely. We've become known as the summit in the world. Actually, we're gaining an international reputation as well as a national one, in terms of our ability to gather a cross-sectoral dialogue from the public and private sector, from the NGO community, as well as the governmental, agencies and elected officials, to come together and talk about solutions, and then actually, on panels and on with keynotes, but roundtables, but to produce a roadmap coming out of the summit that's going to pay forward to other summits and connect the information from our day to other gatherings like the Clinton Global Initiative or Davos or the Creating Climate Wealth Summits that Richard Branson's creating and so forth, so that we can begin to, you know, continue to implement these strategies in ways that that really aren't being focused on. You know, we're not really interested in having this continued dialogue about what's not possible and the divided Congress always fighting about every single inch about how to solve the problem, whether it's raising the debt ceiling or whether, you know, it's health care or whether it's cap and trade. And we need to, as people, come together now and move forward pretty quickly in terms of implementing the solutions to the problems that are facing us.
Wow. Wow, that's wonderful. I was just, when you were talking about some of the governmental thing, I don't know.
What happened? Did we get disconnected?
Well, a temporary glitch, and now we're back on track with the technology working. And Chip, I was curious, for the conference coming up, what kind of response are you seeing from the Obama administration or the Environmental Protection Agency? You getting any cooperation or support?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, you know, the fact that we have Jane Lubchenco coming, you know, she's one of the top administration officials over at NOAA, is testament to that fact. Last year we had Senator Bennett joining us and Governor Ritter and so forth. So we've always had a lot of support from the administration. They believe in this. And then also Lisa Jackson wanted to join us this year, but was unable to do so because of prior commitment. And she, of course, runs the EPA. So
oh,
the answer
great.
To that is yes, lots of support.
Okay. And I'm also curious because you've got a background, if I understand, as a film producer that goes back quite a few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of these things, I don't know if you could speak a little bit about, we've got the Daryl Hannah, Chevy Chase, Cheryl Lee, some people that would be popular to help get the message out there. Can you speak a little bit about some of the movies and some of the vehicles that they represent for helping to make this more popular in our country?
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, one of the programs that our day has is a year-round effort to implement our ACCELI program. It's like Accelerate. You know, it's the our day Climate and Energy Literacy Initiative. And so what that is it's our attempt to bridge the gap between popular culture and the science of climate and energy literacy. You know, how do we make the science of climate and energy cool and hip?
Yeah.
And desirable and attractive and sexy, okay, so that the young people begin to pick it up and want it in all the various ways, through music, film, fashion, etc. And so one of the ways that we are trying to implement that is through Hollywood, you know, the creators of popular content in a lot of ways. And last year when James Cameron came to our day, who was the producer and director of Avatar, you know, he was able to talk about that because one of the reasons that Avatar was so successful, the most successful movie in the history of the world, is because of its core environmental messaging and indigenous values that people enjoyed so much. I think everybody knows that we have serious problems on our planet, that the human race is responsible for those problems, and therefore we can also fix them. So when it comes to people like Chevy Chase and Daryl Hannah, you know, they have a certain amount of celebrity in our society, and they can use that celebrity in a very positive way to begin to address this issue. And we'll be talking about that at the summit.
Ah. Great. And one of the things, separate from the summit, because I'm just thinking that, of course, I want to encourage people to come to the summit. I mean, gosh, to come up to Aspen this time of year, you got to do it. And then to come up there for something to hang out with these kind of people. This is just amazing, folks. If you have any commitment to the planet, to environment, to sustaining your life and for your family, this would certainly be the place to go. Now,
right.
What I'm curious about, when people are not able to attend, would your website be the place, or where would you recommend that they go on a regular basis to keep up on this and to be involved in this?
Yeah, my website is the place, and we're going to try to organize a, streaming video of the summit, and also, have the, so you can watch from your house what's going on.
Mm.
And we also have a box set of last year's summit. We're going to re-record this year, so. We're trying to preserve this information and move it out into the world.
Ah, okay. And I don't know if you've gotten any requests, but I'm just thinking so often I encourage different guests to do what they can to help publicize whatever they're doing, because it's usually something positive and important for our well-being. And so I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't it be fascinating to find some place where there was actually a list of some of the business leaders, some of the influential people in government, some of the media folks like Daryl Hannah or Chevy Chase or others who are very much committed to this, and to actually have this place where you could see maybe pictures of them or a list, and so someone tunes in and goes, geez, this place is not going downhill like a crashing airplane, like the news says every day. There's all these people involved in making a planet a better place, and we're dealing with massive levels of depression on in our society and in the world. And to me, how encouraging it is to look at your website and see pictures of all these people and go, wow, things are much better than I thought.
Exactly. Well, our day is the place. The website.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. I love it. And then I don't know if you, as the founder of this, over the years, and just kind of a progress check in. Have you seen some things that you can report that are moving ahead that you feel really good about, and some current goals for this year's summit that you'd like to see happen?
Well, I mean, we want to see very, very good policies implemented by the states, by the cities, by the states, by the nation rapidly, and we also want to see the private sector, moving forward without any of those policies. I mean, the policies are very helpful, but the reality is that there's money to be made right now in all of these ways through renewables and efficiency. And it can, just lift up our local communities to a much higher standard of living than we already have. Very, very strong opportunities avail themselves everywhere. So we talk at our day in terms of local, regional, national, and global. But at the end of the day, it's all local. All the carbon is burned locally, and the impacts are all felt locally, wherever we are in the world. So the solutions really come down to that local implementation. And so we need very strong leadership at the local level, at the regional level, the national levels, at the global level. But we also like to connect the dots between all of those.
Hmm. Okay. So that it's comprehensive, because I see, in addition, T. Boone Pickens, Ted Turner, major investors, and then there's another person on the site, Thomas, Steyer, at the Thaleron Capital Management. So apparently there's going to be a number of folks attending this that are in a position to take a look at potential investments of things that can actually move this whole plan ahead.
Exactly right.
And to me, I think that's one of the themes that you mentioned. We're not just you're not just wanting to have people talk about something that's a good thing to do. You wanted to bring together all the different pieces so that something can move ahead into physical form and come out there and make these changes.
That's exactly right, Ken. We've got to take the bull by the horns here and basically move forward with all of the rapid implementation strategies that are being afforded to us through the clean technology, renewable energy, and energy efficiency sectors. You know, China's red-hot economy has been growing at 10% annually for the last 10 years, and we are actually on the receiving end of that in a way, because their economy has been growing because of all of the products that they've been making that Americans have been consuming. They've also been financing our debt load, buying our treasury bills. Well, you know, that's not a very sustainable model. We've got to, reduce our debt. We've got to go from a $14 trillion debt down to, a balanced budget again. You know, that's a very important conversation that we've been having. We don't seem to be able to agree on the solutions politically, but I will say that once our markets adopt the renewable energy and energy efficient strategies that we're talking about on today's program, we're going to see a situation where we can work together with our friends in China and Europe and Africa, India, everywhere, to where the world's economies stop competing so much and start cooperating towards a mutual beneficial end. So, you know, the motto of our day is from competition to collaboration. We believe in that, and we think the capital markets can actually grow with that kind of philosophy as well.
For the United States, our country here, to me, this seems like there's some potential of something to turn it around, because people have talked about, oh my gosh, the huge debt, the economy slowing, the problem with the countries losing faith in the dollar, that it may no longer down the road be the global currency of choice in which goods are exchanged, which could have traumatic impacts on our economy. And if I'm getting a sense of it, can you comment that this could actually, in the next few years, turn our whole economy around, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I know it. If we would ever actually, it's the greatest, you know, wealth creation opportunity that's ever been afforded to the human race in the history of the world. And it's happening in spite of itself, you know, without any good regulations and policies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is, as my friend Amory Lovins once so eloquently said, there's more money to be made in saving energy than there is in producing it. Well, he's right about that. That's how inefficient we are. So, I know.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Huh.
So there's just enormous opportunities everywhere. You know, we can solve the problem and raise our standard of living, very, very quickly. But we've got to have the political will to do it. You know, the people have got to tell their leaders what they want, what they have to have. And so let's just get on with it.
Sure. And I don't know if there would be resources from past events that you've done or something coming out of this event where people that are politically inspired would actually have some things that they could not just say to a congressperson or a senator, something needs to be done, but to actually be writing or emailing things that are thought-out plans, because you've got some genius-level people here that you bring to your conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. We've got to tell our elected leaders, whether they're local or regional or national, that you know, that we want renewable energy and we want it now. You know, and it only makes sense.
Yeah.
It only makes sense.
And so
it's
do you think
for everybody.
There will be some actual plans that people will be able to access from you or the website or some way to help move this ahead beyond the conference? And this is so exciting, so I'm here chomping at the bit going, okay. What do we do to get the word out to millions of people, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, so that this really gets some traction?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you think some of that may end up taking place.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're going to have media coverage in all kinds of different shapes and forms, and we're working on some national network coverage, trying to get C-SPAN. You know, they came and recorded last year, and see if they'll come back. So we're encouraged about what it looks like.
Right. And I'm looking here at your list, and I hadn't heard the name Leilani Munter, the NASCAR racer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking a huge part of our population, I don't know if you call it, there's just the conservatives or the rednecks or the, I mean, there's different terms that I don't think are very flattering, but a lot of good old folks in our country love cars, love racing, and here's this Leilani Munter that as I'm learning about this, she's an amazing woman that is the carbon-free girl. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, sure. Leilani Munter is a NASCAR driver. She's one of the top women in the country, actually, on the circuit. And she is dedicated to biofuels and to using her position of recognizability over at NASCAR to point the way towards a clean energy future by being a champion of cleaner burning fuels, and in one of the dirtiest, you know, obviously industries out there, of course, and that's the automotive sector. In this instance, the race car part of that. Now, she is a champion of green values, of energy efficiency, renewable energy, and she's another good example of using a celebrity to get that message across. So. We're delighted that she's joining us at the ARDE Summit this year to have this conversation, in a really dynamic way. You know, she's a leader, and she takes her leadership very seriously, and so that's really just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, to me, Chip, this is a testament to all your years of work to be. Bringing these kind of resources that can reach a level. I mean, because NASCAR, it gets all these men, and she's a beautiful woman. And then on top of it, incredibly healthy. I was reading a vegetarian, so she's really into a healthy lifestyle and now sustainable living. And of course, to inspire other women, because it's not just the NASCAR men, but all the wives of all these families. So, I mean, this is like opening a major door to a whole other part of the community that isn't usually thinking environmentally. So, mm-hmm. I mean, congrats. This is big.
Well, you know, we're hoping to get it a lot bigger than it is, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it makes me curious. I don't know if Leilani is friends with Danica Patrick, who's another... a wonderful woman racing, and if Danica's open to any of this, but that would be certainly another feather to add to the cap of the goals of the things that you're bringing forward. So, you know, and of course, Daryl Hannah has been just so popular over the years in the movies, so this is just great. I love it. And now, is there anything from your experience that you could suggest to our listeners that they can be doing just on their own, like right in their own households, to to help move some things ahead that are important?
Well, you know, everybody has a carbon footprint, and we've all got to take responsibility for that. So, you know, of course, all the things that we've all heard, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, you know, change out your light bulbs for the energy efficient ones. Try to replace your car with a more energy efficient, better mileage unit. Try to take public transportation as much as possible. Get your electricity from solar or wind where you can, where that option is, you know, exists. Sometimes it costs a little bit more, but at the end of the day, these are the kinds of things that it's going to take. You know, all added together, we're going to be able to very quickly reduce the amount of harmful greenhouse gases in the atmosphere once we all begin to implement those strategies.
Wow. Okay. So the folks are just excited about ARDAY, ARDAY.net. Check it out. Attend the conference if you're able. Tune into it. Check it out because there'll be postings of wonderful things to help you stay connected to this and get excited about the real good news that the planet, while facing a crisis, is actually an opportunity for the, as Chip said, the biggest wealth creation opportunity in the history of humanity. That's pretty exciting, Chip.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's true.
Yeah, this is not. You haven't been just checking out medical marijuana places. This is actually the reality, and it's coming forth from people like Ted Turner and T. Boone Pickens. I mean, these are very powerful, wealthy individuals. And Branson, you mentioned, also with his work, I think he's going to have a representative, Richard Branson, at the conference too, isn't he? What is that? Bear with me a second. I was trying to, looking through the, this guy, Jigar Saha?
Jigar Shah.
No, Jigar Shah. Of the Carbon War Room?
Yes.
Okay. And I thought that might be something that Branson had helped put together.
Well, he actually founded the Carbon War Room, and then Jigar was hired to be the CEO of that organization.
Okay. So. Yeah. So, I mean, folks, this is the kind of the people that are showing up at this thing, and these folks have too much to do with their time. If this wasn't practical and something that could actually create the wealth and create the change in the planet, they wouldn't be showing up. So check out ARDAY.net. And Chip, I just want to thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to share this with our listeners, because this is absolutely fabulous good news.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm delighted to have that opportunity. And let me just leave you with one final thought, and that is that we're going to take our cross-sector dialogue and our roundtables and all of our tracks and produce a roadmap going forward that will articulate these solutions and then connect the dots with other summits and conventions and conferences and thought leaders to really make a difference. But one of the things I'm excited about is that on Sunday, we're going to engage the moral question in terms of the engagement of faith-based communities and talking about whether, you know, the earth was given put here for dominion or stewardship. And that's going to be a very good conversation to have because, of course, I think that we're all stewards of this creation and that we have to take the responsibility to do that and that so that we can ensure the success of future generations that are coming onto the planet. And that doesn't just include human beings, but actually all life itself. So, you know,
wow.
American Renewable Energy Day is engaged in all of that, and we really intend to continue our work so that we can have a successful future for all of our kids.
Wow. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. What a way to wrap up. Chip, thank you so much. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. And until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.